From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt. Noel is on an adventure today, but will be returning soon.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. As you know, we record these episodes in advance. They publish anywhere from, what would you say, Matt, a week to maybe 2 weeks later?
Yeah, I would say maximum 2 weeks. We can't really get that far ahead.
Yeah, that's the most we've ever had it together, actually. That's literally the most. And I think that was one time. Today's episode is a classic episode, I would call it, something that we've known about for years, but we've somehow never done a podcast on. But we are, like the rest of the world, we are living in a time where history is being written. We are recording this on June 1st, 2020. We are based, as we say all the time, in Atlanta, Georgia. And as we record this, the nation is awash in protest against ongoing police brutality.
Yes, it is. And our city is certainly seeing a lot of the protests. And it's all in reaction to the killing of a man named George Floyd. And we're going to talk about that at a later date. But today we'd like to just have maybe a moment of reflection within this podcast, and then we'll start the show. Okay, so switching gears here, we got another voice message, and I say another because this person calls in all the time. His name is Wayne. Wayne, you know who you are. You've seen the title of this episode, so I'm sure you are quite excited, as are Ben and I and Paul. Today, we are covering something that we've talked about before, as Ben mentioned at the top here, but it's something near and dear to your heart, Wayne. And it's something that I have cited several times as my favorite conspiracy, I believe, Ben. And today we are asking the question, what is Project Bluebeam?
So here are the facts. Let's start this one a bit differently. I was thinking about this. The best way to start it, it's odd to get into. We're going to start with the actual conspiracy theory at hand. When we ask, what is Project Bluebeam? I'd like to give you the origin story first. Most people know about Project Bluebeam because back in 1994, a Quebecois author named Serge Manast went, achieved some notoriety and some public attention in fringe circles with claims that NASA, either plans to or already has begun implementing a New Age religion with the Antichrist, or some version thereof, as its leader, in hopes of starting a new world order through the use of high-end communications technology.
Yes, and it's not just NASA, by the way, the North American Space Agency. It's also the United Nations. So everybody was going to get involved with this whole thing, at least according to this conspiracy. And the basic idea is pretty much the scenario that played out in Watchmen. If you've ever read the comic or watched the movie that came out back in the day, or the scenario that was alluded to very much so in the new HBO series of The Watchmen, where that's my son, where the only thing that could really bring all of humanity together is some kind of outside invading force of a power more powerful than the biggest nuclear weapon that's ever existed, right? Some kind of large-scale global event that threatened all of humanity so we would all band together.
And there's an interesting point in chronology I want to propose here. First, let me step back and say you're right, Matt. That's a good point. It wasn't just the United Nations. It's not just NASA. It's also the Freemasons. It's also, you know, what's vaguely referred to as the Illuminati at times. Multiple Mad Libs of organizations come into play or under accusation here. But Watchmen, the comic, was created by a fantastic writer, notoriously cantankerous human being named Alan Moore. It first appeared in 1985. So keep that time in your mind. Keep it at the front of your head. So we'll give you a spoiler alert. Because of the age of Watchmen, we're going to count this down. Spoilers, turn back now or have Watchmen spoiled for you. 3, 2, 1. Spoilers. In Watchmen, one of the characters attempts to create this global unification you mentioned, Matt, by genetically engineering a gigantic squid-like thing that also has psychic powers. And it creates a tremendous tragedy. Millions of people die. It's very bad, in short. In Project Bluebeam, again, according to Serge Monast, all the world's governments conspire to create the Messiah that they wish to see in the world, and to create it not as a – it's difficult to say what Monast conclusively believed toward the end, but at times he had described it as simply a means of secular control by taking advantage of people's credulous nature. But then in other times, he's very explicitly saying this is actual supernatural stuff. We'll get into the specifics a bit, but for the timeline, it's interesting because in a lot of conspiratorial claims, we see that their Achilles heel can be timeline, right? Like the end of the world, millenarian cults and so on. They always seem to have some challenges when they say the end of the world will be in 1858. Wait, scratch that. I misread the, you know, holy tiles. It'll be 1917, but definitely 1917. Monast has explain that by saying that the world's governments, true masters, you know, insert noun here, whoever you think they might be, wanted to do this in 1983, 2 years before Watchmen publishes, but they weren't able to do it for one reason or another, call it technical difficulties. And then later in his 1994 comments, he said it would happen in 1995. And then he said what happened in 1996. That's the same year that a widely mistranslated Nostradamus quote also was said to foretell the end of the world. Around the time of his death, in 1996, Monast claimed that Project Bluebeam would occur in 2000. It's 2020 now, a horrible year. But as far as we know, the mainstream of the world has not said Monast was right, has not said Project Bluebeam has occurred, but we'll see that not everybody on the fringes agrees.
And again, we are going to get into the specifics of what Serge Monast believed was going to happen or was supposed to happen, and all of those times, where the date kind of kept getting pushed back and pushed back. But let's jump backwards to 1945, to the year that Serge Monast was born. That's just the time he was born. We're not actually going to spend a lot of hanging around in 1945. We kind of remember World War II and it ending and everything. And then moving on up to the 1970s and 1980s, Serge, or Mr. Monast, he was a journalist. I mean, he was pretty legit. He was at times pretty controversial, but he was a member of the Social Credit Party back in those times. Again, we said he was from Quebec, Canada, That's where he spent a lot of his life. And then in the 1990s, he started shifting his focus away from, you know, journalism with a capital J, and started writing books. And books about his beliefs, books about conspiracies, essentially. The New World Order was one of the main topics that he focused on. And he talks about his inspirations being one person specifically, William Guy Carr, that's C-A-R-R, who was also a Canadian.
Right, William James Guy Carr. He's a former Navy officer, author, noted conspiracy theorist. He's kind of a linchpin in the folklore of North American-based Illuminati thought. And he is also, I should note, he is also definitely an anti-Semite. I would not consider him necessarily, I'm saying this very carefully, I would not consider him necessarily a rational source. But that is someone that thematically we see Manasse drawing a lot of tropes from. So Manasse founded the International Free Press Agency, and that would come to be where he published the bulk of his work in this field. He had an interview on a television show hosted by ufologist Richard Glynn. It may be familiar to some people. I want to apologize in advance for my butchering of the fine French language here. Esoterisme Experimental, Esoteric Experiments. He is quite emphatic, warning people about the rise of a one-world government. And in 1995, he publishes what is largely considered to be his, you know, his magnum opus.
It's called Le Protocole. This is me trying to do French again. The Protocols of Toronto, 666. And inside this work, he reveals that the Masons, there's a very specific group of them called 666. And these people, for 20 years, have been getting together with all the movers and shakers of the world, the most powerful people, to establish essentially the Illuminati, or, you know, in this case, it's referred to as the New World Order. And it's their entire goal is to control the minds of humanity, of all the people, mass mind control, essentially. And for someone who truly believes this, that, you know, there's some group out there that's secretly trying to put everyone under some kind of spell or mind control, you can imagine that there's a feeling of, you know, of fear that maybe these people know that, you know, and you're talking about it publicly. So, you know, whether it was true or not, Manasse believed and he claimed that he was being hunted by police, by other authorities for distributing this kind of stuff, what he called for his involvement in, quote, networks of prohibited information, right? The stuff they don't want you to know. You can imagine that he probably felt that, whether it was true or not.
Yeah, and that is a quote from him, networks of prohibited information. That's something else you should keep in the front of your mind as we continue here. Think of this part as the, you know, the roller coaster slowly tick, 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 up the hill. So he homeschooled his children, his son and his daughter, and then eventually, in September of 1996, the year of his death, they were removed from his care and made wards of the state. The idea being that they had a right to receive education. Manasse himself was arrested just a few months later, December of 1996. He spent the night incarcerated. He was released. He returned to his home, and he passed away. The official cause is listed as a heart attack. And today, that official conclusion remains that the death of Serge Manasse came as a result of a combination of poor health and stress. But his supporters will argue that he was assassinated through the use of high-tech intelligence agency or, you know, world order connected weapons, and that his death was either framed as a heart attack or that the heart attack itself was caused by some sort of suppressed technology, all with the ultimate end of silencing his voice and preventing him from disseminating all or part of the truth of this grand scheme.
I would say there's a tough thing to deal with right here, and it's the concept that there could be a strategy. Let's say if you're an organized group of people, whether an intelligence agency or not, and you wanted to discredit somebody, one way to do that is to attack the home structure. That would be a smart play, at least. And another thing to do is to make it look like someone dies of natural causes if you want to remove them. So, as we're saying, the rumors float around on the internet about all kinds of things with regards to Mr. Manasse's home life and his death. And really, I mean, that's a ton of background right there. But what we want to do now is take a deep dive into that which is Project Bluebeam. What was it? How did it work? Or how was it supposed to work? And why do some people think it's already happened or is about to happen? And we'll talk about that right after a word from our sponsor.
Here's where it gets crazy. So there's a plan, right? There's always a plan. Let's walk through what Serge Manasse outlines. He breaks it down into a series of phases or steps. And interestingly enough, you know, I think we've both spent a lot of time thinking about timeline here. Interestingly enough, these steps are not necessarily delineated with concrete phases of time. Like step one is not necessarily 3 years, 10 years, 2 months, or anything like that. So the first is to discredit and or demolish the majority of what we would consider religious-based archaeological knowledge. This would be accomplished, again, this is this one person's argument, this would be accomplished by manufacturing earthquakes at targeted points around the world. And then those earthquakes would destroy some things, but they would more importantly appear to reveal things, faked discoveries at these locations. And that's Manasse's phrase there. He says they would be faked. Fake discoveries at these locations that would fundamentally disprove existing religious doctrine. We've heard about this stuff before, you know, about maybe the early days of the Catholic Church, various documents or records being found that were considered heretical to the orthodoxy that was agreed upon at Nice or at the Council of Worms. So we know that especially older religions find things that don't jibe with what they want the truth to be all the time. Serge Manasse is just saying here, this would be weaponized.
Yeah. And there's a lot of imagery that's been associated with this concept that Manasse puts forward in Project Bluebeam. You know, everything from kind of been what you're describing, like finding numerous Dead Sea Scrolls in various parts of the world that disprove the existing doctrines of Islam and Christianity and Catholicism and all these things. There's another version of it that's a little more sci-fi. That's like a 2001 Space Odyssey thing where, you know, a cube of some sort or a rectangle or a pylon or something is discovered that appears to, you know, somehow represent truths that go back beyond the established religious doctrines. It's just really interesting there. And it, no matter what version of it you choose to go with for this instance, let's go with just the numerous Dead Sea Scrolls version. The goal here, at least in Manasseh's view, is to discredit all of the existing religions so that we can create a new one, right? And this would be a way to do that. You'd want to get rid of the old before bringing in the new, or at least get people to doubt just enough in their current belief system so that they'd be ready or more easily swayed to pick up a new one.
Yeah. You know, I propose that as we go through this, we talk about some of the arguments for and against this plan, just trying to be fair. So first, not to be, negative Nathan about this or whatever, but first, innumerable examples throughout the span of human history show that people are, A, not easily swayed in matters of faith. Changing your faith is such a big deal, in fact, that many religious figures are primarily famous for making that switch. Second, we know that people, even with relatively mundane opinions, people tend to dig in and double down when they're presented with something that feels like an attack or a contradiction of something we already believe. It could be anything from like which store has the best cheesesteak in Philadelphia to which is the one true God. Like, people do not like changing our minds. We're wired not to do that. And second, even if you could get some people to change their opinion or their belief about something so very profound and personal, it would be virtually impossible to make every single member of any large religious movement abandon their faith. That is something that has literally never happened in the history of the world.
But you know what's something that has happened? Humans have caused earthquakes. You know, Nikola Tesla tried it. He wanted it to be real. Whether or not he was fully successful, we'll never know. But we do know that man-made earthquakes do happen. So, you know, that part of the theory here could stand up. The problem is the only, at least, you know, in acknowledged or proven versions of man-made earthquakes, we've only really seen it kind of happen as an accident or as a side effect of something else.
Right. Yeah. Like, the most easily proven cases of manufactured earthquakes in the past, I would say past several years at least, have all been the unforeseen consequences of fracking, right? If you wanted to target a specific earthquake, officially the technology to do that doesn't exist. But suppressed technology is a whole other badger in the bag here.
Well, and the other thing is you'd have to have an earthquake occur that's so targeted to then have something open, you know, be revealed, let's say, whatever it's going to be, and then it'd have to be discovered too. So you'd have to do it in, you know, a somewhat populated area to reveal this thing. There are a lot of issues with that concept of an earthquake then disprove religion with some artifact.
Yeah, it's not the most straightforward plan, I'll admit. But you're right. So that is one big takeaway. Human beings are proven to be capable of creating earthquakes, just maybe not to this degree of sophistication. But second, and I'll defer to you here, Matt, because I think this is maybe your favorite part. Favorite's a weird term, but this is the part where almost 10 years ago now, you and I spent a couple hours just shooting the breeze about this one the first time I learned about it. And that is what has been called by Manasseh supporters, as well as his critics, step two or phase two of Project Bluebeam, the space show.
Yeah, this is the real show. This is the big deal. This is the turning point in the plot. This is the thing that makes everybody go, "Oh no." The concept here is that holographic technology, some kind of holograms, three-dimensional images, would be projected across the planet, not just in one, you know, city center, not just in New York or, you know, Dubai, it would be everywhere. And these images would represent whatever the, let's say, the primary religious figure is in a region. That's what shape this projection, this hologram would take. And there would be audio associated with it. So from somewhere, either projected from a satellite, that's generally where Manast believed it would come from, space-based satellites with laser technology that's shining down essentially onto cloud cover or just into the moisture in the air, where the audio coming through would be speaking in every language, depending on the region, depending on the dialect. It would be an all-encompassing thing. And they would essentially say, the same kind of things that were being set up in phase one, which is the old way of thinking is done. And then all of these various, prophets, gods, sons of gods, whatever it is that's being worshipped in that region, it would merge down into one being, essentially one god. And this image that would be created then across the world, the same image, would be the Antichrist, essentially, the one symbol that would herald in the New World Order's plans.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And it's important to note that the Antichrist here, the term is what Serge is using, Serge Manasse, but the Antichrist that will appear to these people in this theory is not an antagonistic force. It's a force of illumination and salvation. And this is interesting. So let's go back through pros and cons, right? So con, there's a big assumption here. We have to remember that this is being proposed, this is being sort of like ideated and then proposed in the 90s, but now in 2020, secularism is on the rise. Also, would this thing alone, this physical light show alone, be enough to persuade someone that this is actually their God instead of some sort of mental issue of their own, some sort of even weather anomaly or hallucination? There are other things, like what about religious figures that cannot have their form expressed? You know what I mean? Like one of the great examples of that is if Project Bluebeam was attempting to sway Muslim communities, what are you going to project the face of Allah? Do you think that's going to work? Because that's pretty explicitly not something that any holy force would do in that belief system. But you'll also see people, I think we should stop here, Matt. We should say you'll also see people claiming that there have been various tests or demonstrations of this technology already, like anything that involves light or a lot of stuff that you just see in the sky that appears anomalous or even real world events.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You'll find things online that state that the attacks of September 11th, 2001 were either A, the Project Bluebeam in action, or a test run of projection technology. And while, we don't necessarily believe this, the concept here is that September 11th, 2001 was one of those events that really did change the course of history and change the way the United States and other countries viewed a lot of other countries, and it just it had a large effect. And you'll see online people saying that the planes going into the two towers were actually projections. You can find that all over the internet. There are several other examples, but that's the one that I've probably seen most commonly. There are others that state that known missile tests that have been seen that were originally reported on as UFO sightings. You may remember the spiral. I forget the exact name of it, but like the portal that happened to be a couple stages of a rocket and the way it looked in the air. That was reportedly some kind of blue beam test, at least, again, according to online forums and several researchers. I have personally not seen anything that I would consider a full-scale Project Bluebeam test. But again, the whole point of it, if it were real, is that we probably couldn't discern whether or not it was a hologram.
Right, right. And this leads to the rise of deepfakes as well, because the interesting thing about localized events that are then shared online, either in video or still photography, is that people aren't seeing it in person. You're seeing a visual clip that purports to portray something in an accurate manner. And, you know, you just can't trust it. I wish I had a better answer. You can't trust it. So if anything, people are becoming a little bit more skeptical about this stuff. So it's kind of an argument against this. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The idea that this is all kind of a test run. But Manast, to his credit, I would say, says that there is a way that people will be reliably influenced by this appearance. It won't just be like the Stone Mountain Laser Show, which is so famous here in Atlanta, Georgia. And there are, there are other examples aside from UFOs. They're like specific, concrete, pretty secular examples. I know you know one, Matt, and I've got one that actually is true, but it was drawing board phase.
Well, yeah, wasn't there a plan? And Ben, you'll have to forgive me, I'm pulling this from when we did our video way back in the day, but wasn't there a plan to possibly project Allah or the Prophet Muhammad over Baghdad for military purposes?
Yes. Yep. That's correct. It was drawing board phase. But there was another plan as well from Uncle Sam. Maybe it was Lansdale said, hey, you guys, what if we fake the second coming of Jesus Christ over Cuba? And they're like, why would we do that? And he's like, well, you know, to overthrow Castro, right? You could tell that probably came pretty late in their brainstorming session that day. They had gone through the heart attack gun, which will be important later. They had gone through the exploding cigars, weaponizing animals. But
we're talking 80s, 90s, 70s in some cases, but it's probably closer to the 80s and 90s when these things were being discussed.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's on cocaine. You know what I mean? They were probably seamlessly transitioning to talking about how great their synth albums were going to be.
Yeah, but yes. But it's also, you know, there were military minds thinking about this back then. And, you know, as we're going to talk a little later in this episode, the tech has only improved.
Right. That's correct. So there is an explanation, though. Manast does say Manast does seem to acknowledge that just seeing something wouldn't be enough to swing the needle of people's minds. And that's where he proposes the existence of psychotronic technology, which we've covered in the past. Psychotronic technology is essentially a Russian Soviet originated phrase describing the use of technology to amplify psychic powers. Think of like Menusteric goats would be a popular fictional thing. So the idea was they would use certain types of technology to give people ESP or to give people the ability to reach into the minds of others. In Manast's world, Project Bluebeam depends upon a Soviet-built computer that would be fed with, quote, minute physiopsychological particulars based on studies of anatomy and electromechanical composition of the human body and the studies of the electrical, chemical, and biological properties of the human brain. And then that every single human being on the planet Earth would have a specific radio wavelength that this computerized system would intimately know this biometric data of yours, and that it would use that to affect your reaction, that these computers had also furthermore cut their teeth, cut their mechanical algorithmic teeth on inducing suicide. It is true, we know that in our previous research, certain frequencies can affect people in astonishing and deeply disturbing ways. But for the record, we still have not proven the existence of the brown note, which I know is a question a lot of our fellow listeners had as soon as we mentioned that. But, okay, so there we go. That's the thing. They're saying we're gonna show this huge thing in the sky that will merge and become your new god, and then we're going to make sure that you are, through the use of technology, we're going to make sure that you are in a suggestible enough state that you believe it, that you experience a revelation, kind of like the God helmet, which gives one the sensation of encountering the divine. But it's weird, because if it's NASA doing this, as is commonly proposed in his theories, why would they work with the Soviets, especially when the USSR at the time, as far as we know, was pretty far behind NASA in a lot of ways? It's like saying, hey, I'm Sony or I'm Microsoft, and I've got this great plan, but to do it, I need 1,200 Ataris.
Yeah. Or, you know, yeah, I was just going to say working directly with Chinese technology that's competing. Yeah, I can just imagine it. It wouldn't work that way. But we should mention here, by the way, it doesn't stop there. You know, you may think, oh, wait, they're going to use psychotronics, you say? I remember that episode. I remember that concept. Okay, that's, we're just like, we're spiraling down a conspiracy rabbit hole here. It feels like, well, we kind of are in a way, but it's just getting a little more complicated because there's a subphase, a step two, like 2.2, let's say. And in this concept or in this phase, the holograms are going to be used to overthrow the world order by, here's a quote, setting loose millions of programmed religious fanatics through demonic possession on a scale never witnessed before. Never witnessed before. It's an interesting phrase to add in there.
Yeah, I like that framing, you know, because it sort of anticipates people in the audience will say, well, I've seen like three or four people possessed by demons. That's a Tuesday for me. Well, here in Boise, Idaho or something.
And you know what? All of those demonic possessed religious fanatics are going to be hearing, and the rest of us will be hearing as they're running through the streets. Da, 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 da. Oh, we can't play the rest, but you know what that is. You've heard that before. That's in your head already. What is that?
That is Beethoven's Ode to Joy, the number one most popular debut song for Antichrist, as far as we know. We did the research. So you know, obviously now we've got an important point that's introduced here. This has gone from the appearance of the supernatural or the divine in order to manipulate people to the existence of the supernatural. And it's a quick shift. It happens, you know, the way that a coin trick happens with a magician. You're supposed to be looking at a lot of sound and fury from one side, and then all of a sudden, Manast hits you with, boom, demons are real, the devil is real, the infernal powers are after you and your loved ones. I see that as a plot hole. Because it's not introduced earlier. It's a twist. And I know there are several plot holes here, but like you said, Matt, we do have examples of intelligence agencies attempting to mess with people's minds in similar ways in the past. Officially, those results are not near on this level. Because, you know, one of the biggest plot holes to me about this is the idea that it affects every single human being on Earth at once. There are very few things, very few things, including pandemics, including nuclear weapons that affect every single human being on Earth at once.
That is true, Ben. I would say that if you could effectively convince enough people, not all people, but enough people that this kind of event is occurring where perhaps the rapture is happening, or perhaps the, you know, the religious figure that you worship every day has come back, but that religious figure is for some reason not what you thought it was, and therefore your religion and entire basis of belief is not what you thought it was, I can imagine that it could cause at least chaos on some level, in, you know, pretty widespread chaos, if you could pull that off.
I see. Yes. So you don't have to convince everyone. You just have to convince a significant, I almost said market position, but that's how it feels. You have to just swing a significant demographic. Well, here's the thing, though. When these people see this God in the sky, they're going to hear Ode to Joy, but that's not all they're going to hear. They're going to hear something else, Manas proposes. We'll get to that after a word from our sponsor. We're in the thick of it, conspiracy realists. We're on the third step of Project Bluebeam, the third phase, which would be what Manast calls telepathic electronic two-way communication. This would be through the use of extremely low-frequency radio waves, the conveyance of a message into people's minds such that this thing they're seeing in the sky appears to be directly speaking to them in their language and saying the same message, you know, in any language in the world, all the way from the biggest ones like Mandarin to, you know, very small dialects of isolated tribes. As you can imagine, that doesn't really hold up when you get to those smaller dialects, some of which are dying, some of which don't have any speakers who can really translate other than the, like, 250, in some cases 10 people who know them. So that's a plot hole. And Manast's explanation doesn't really bear up to what we know about the technology now, and his, even if we relegate it to the realm of speculation, his explanation of how this would work still leaves a lot to be desired. Maybe that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I think it does. Conceptually, the way I understand it, it's that there would be small hidden microchips in a lot of the electronics that exist in everyday life within, you know, like a city situation or a suburban situation, where there's a lot of tech around. The concept is that all those things are numerous, you know, numerous technologies are going to be in some way communicating to you through these essentially low frequency waves. Another thing that kind of connects back to this one is the concept that the computer is going to know everything about you, right? That's one of his major, one of Manast's major things is that the government is keeping track of everything you're doing, or some corporate entity or entities are keeping track of all your information that's being stored and tracked, and then it will be used to control you by talking to you in familiar or about familiar things within your life. Maybe in 1994, that's a pretty hard stretch. But if you're in 2020, the concept that a small handful of corporations knows a lot about your life, very specific details about your life, that's not much of a stretch at all.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. Absolutely. I mean, that part's one of the things that has the highest likelihood of being true, honestly, for people who live especially in very technologically dense parts of the world, you know, or who have authoritarian governments. Don't let Big Brother be out of the game. It's not just Target that's targeting you. I could have phrased that better, but you get the drift. So there we go. Now we're at step four. Step four is the penultimate or second to ultimate part. Step four is more like 4A, 4B, 4C. Manasseh says, the next part is to say, is to have this divine thing essentially warn people that these revelations are occurring because there is an outside enemy attacking humanity entire. An alien invasion is going to occur at every major city. Concurrently, somehow at the same time, those who still cling to Christianity, which he specifically mentions Christianity at this point, he says those who still cling to Christianity are going to be made to believe that the rapture is about to occur. And then a marriage of electronic and supernatural, read infernal, forces will occur, such that these supernatural forces, demons, you know, creatures of ill intent, will be able to travel through fiber optics, travel through, I don't know, at this stage, like HDMI cables, Wi-Fi routers, telephone lines. Bluetooth is another one, yeah, to penetrate all the electronic equipment, all the appliances, even unto your smart refrigerator and your Fitbit, and that by then they will all have a special microchip installed allowing this to happen. Again, if we bracket the supernatural aspects of this, we know that for a very long time, without the public's knowledge, various tech companies were attempting to build dedicated chips or software-based backdoors into their technology. That's one of the reasons why Chinese manufacturer Huawei is taking so much international flack, because they do have backdoors that the Chinese government can use. The thing is, they're not using those to spread demonic messages. They're using those for industrial and state-level espionage, right? And, you know, it's foolish if you think the U.S. and other countries aren't pressuring their own private entities to do the same thing. That's day one stuff, buddy. That's how you run the world.
That's right. Ben, I have to tell you, just to jump away just slightly, we're talking about, you know, using all of the tech within our own homes against us, right? Or with it, wherever we are, using the tech against us in some way. Just in the research of this, as I was looking back through things and trying to find examples specifically of holographic technology, I just stumbled upon this thing. And it really freaked me out. I'm just going to tell you about it really fast, just because I want you to imagine this as you're listening, everybody. There's an article within Business Insider from 2017, from May 30th, so roughly 3 years ago. It's about research into using somebody's Wi-Fi signal, anybody's Wi-Fi signal, within a structure, and then an exterior antenna somewhere on the outside of the structure, and using this antenna to pick up the Wi-Fi signal and scan the interior of a building to where you could literally see major objects or people that are within that building. And I just want to say, when I'm thinking about Mr. Manasseh's vision of all of these things, all of these technologies fighting back against us, I just didn't think I would have this picture in my mind of my Wi-Fi signal that I know is at all times sending out, you know, energy in wavelength form throughout my house, through me, through, you know, my family's body and everything. And it could be, if you had the right equipment, it could just be read like any other signal and interpreted as it bounces off of things. Sorry, I know that has really nothing to do with this. It's just, I would have never thought to use it in that way. There are people that are paid lots and lots of money to think of ways to use the signals that are being generated, you know, on a consumer level basis, in ways that were not intended for them to be used, for the benefit, a lot of times for military or intelligence purposes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 100% agree. You know, it's kind of like the way you can use a laser to, you can aim a laser at a window pane, and from the vibrations of the window pane, you can tell what people are talking about inside, right?
You can, yeah, you can generate audio, essentially.
You can generate audio, yeah. I mean, all things are energy. It's arguably, at a certain level, it's just a matter of translation of that energy from one form of expression to another, which is, sounds smart enough that I'm sure someone else said that better and earlier, but I agree with it. This is where we, okay, so this is where we get to the New World Order that he's described. New World Order is a lot like saying chair or cancer or candy. You know, it's an umbrella term that describes a lot of things. And sometimes people agree when they throw around this NWO term until they find out the specifics of what they're talking about. So it's important to note, Manast is not just talking about a secular one world order here, or one world government. He's not talking about the kind of globalist problem you might hear folks argue about or warn against in other conspiratorial viewpoints. He's saying that all people will be required to take an oath to Lucifer, to the devil, Lucifer Morningstar, and undergo a ritual initiation to become members of the New World Order. Anyone who resists will encounter the following. Christian children, he says, will be kept for the purposes of human sacrifice, or they will be abused. Prisoners will be used in medical experiments. That's already happening. Check. Prisoners will be used as living organ banks. I know I probably shouldn't be as explicit about this, but that's already happening. Check. At least in some countries. Healthy workers used in slave labor. That's already happening. That's been happening. Check. And said that prisoners who seem like they're on the line, who say like, well, you know, Lucifer seems cool, but I'm only like 92% on board. They'll be sent to re-education centers where they will be have to repent on television and glorify the New World Order. Then there will be an international execution center. And then he alludes to a classification of other people, but he never got into it before. There hasn't been any published matter on it before that he himself wrote. So you can see all the problems here.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of problems there. And it reads a lot like visions of revelations from the Bible or visions of an apocalypse, right? Where this ritual to worship Lucifer, in this case, as he's described it, could be that whole 666 thing that he's already talked about with the Mason group that he's discussed. The possible that insignia would have to be placed on the human body in some way. Just that complete and utter worship of this one person or deity or whatever it ends up being in this, you know, in this scenario. It sounds just an awful lot like the apocalypse that's been described elsewhere. But yeah, the problems are rampant here, I think.
Yeah, the problems are rampant. And one thing that, of course, you have to ask yourself about is, where does this all come from, right? Where's the provenance of Manast ideas? Because they seem very out there. These are extraordinary claims, and extraordinary claims typically require a higher level of – a higher burden of proof. You got to have more evidence, right? But there's very little in the way of solid sources. In fact, Manast's original book that he published with this in France, it's very difficult to get a copy of it now. It's almost – actually, it's kind of impossible. You might see a couple on eBay or maybe Amazon or something at an inflated price, but I would also be very, very cautious. I would assume that those aren't the actual books. I would assume they might be scams or maybe something being sold under false pretenses. Anyway, it's hard to get a lot of the sources here, but we have found some interesting things about where his ideas may have come from. We don't know if he read The Watchmen. You know what I mean? And later encountered that in his own thoughts. As far as we can tell, he never explicitly said, you know, I got this idea from some cool fiction I read. But we also know that right before he gave his famous lecture on Project Bluebeam, Gene Roddenberry entered the chat in a weird way.
Yeah, there was a book that was written by Joel Engel. It's about Gene Roddenberry. It's called Gene Roddenberry, The Myth and the Man Behind Star Trek. It came out in 1994, just before Manasseh's lecture on Project Bluebeam, which became the book. And we've got a quote from it. Here it goes. In May 1975, Gene Roddenberry accepted an offer from Paramount to develop Star Trek into a feature film. That's awesome. I'm glad that that whole thing happened. This is Matt off quote, back to the quote, and moved back into his old office on the Paramount lot. His proposed story told of a flying saucer hovering above Earth that was programmed to send down people who looked like prophets, including Jesus Christ. Wow. So, you know, we can't sit here and tell you today that Serge Manasseh, like, pulled anything directly from this book or from, you know, maybe he heard about this story before the book came out. We cannot tell you that because we do not know. But it's definitely a pretty similar thing there from one of the great sci-fi writers of our time.
Yeah. And they're very similar.
They're really similar.
They are very similar.
But they're not holograms, Ben.
But they're not holograms, Matt. Yeah, you check and mate on that one, bro. And I will say in support of that, that we know hologram technology has advanced leaps and bounds. It's just, as far as we know, it's not where Manasseh thought it was yet, officially. Secondly, just from the way that this is written, the acceptance of this theory requires the acceptance of an Islamic, Judaic, or Christian worldview. The idea that the ancient former first of the angels is indeed real, is super into technology, and has spent a lot of time making an extraordinarily complicated plan with a lot of potential fail points. You know what I mean? And also for this idea, I think there's an inherent, you know, it's a tool that fascism uses a lot. The idea here is that the enemy must be at the same time portrayed as immensely powerful, but also inherently incredibly weak. You know what I mean? This is surprisingly prevalent in Manasseh's idea of Project Bluebeam, that there is this incredibly powerful, evil supernatural force, but that it has to rely, but it's so weak it has to rely on these various other things. Also, the implication that there is a tremendously good supernatural force that is tremendously powerful and, in most religious worldviews, omnipotent, right? All powerful. But that this entity itself could be laid low by technology. It's from a folkloric perspective, it is fascinating. But there is one thing we have to talk about before we end the show that we can't skip over. And it's one thing that's still on my mind, Matt. The death of Serge Manasseh, right? We know that officially it's a heart attack after a terrible night in jail. He was aged 51. You know, it's never a good thing when someone gets a heart attack, but they can happen increasingly as you age, and he's in his 50s. Maybe he wasn't taking care of himself, but you remember this, going back to Castro, when we did research on this, the CIA did significant work on a prototype heart attack gun, a point-and-click heart attack gun.
Yeah, and there's even I remember a video of a prototype showing something very similar to that. There's all kinds of proposed intelligence agency weaponry that's been shown in public, and way more that's never been publicly acknowledged. That is for certain. That's a problem for anybody who dies, basically, that talks about dangerous things, because there's always the possibility then, or at least the fear, that this person was killed or assassinated by a group that has whatever that technology could be. It's a really a situation where it makes the end user, the thinker, you in this case, it gives you doubt about the official story, but it also simultaneously makes you perhaps doubt the unofficial story. It's an odd situation. It creates a lot of uncertainty, I think. And to my mind, that's what this entire thing does. That's what Project Bluebeam does. For me personally, if aliens attack, for sure, if extraterrestrials of any form or creed, attack the Earth or invade the Earth tomorrow, I'm going to think first that it's some kind of holographic technology just because I'm aware of this thing. And that doesn't mean I believe that's what it is, but that's my first thought is going to be, oh, Serge Manasse, Project Bluebeam right there. I think this kind of thinking, it just has that effect on the individual, perhaps.
Right. And it is, it is our duty as human beings to question everything. It is your personal choice whether you wish to accept certain things on faith alone. Again, that's your choice. But when it comes to, I have to say, I am definitely in the former camp. I do question most things, but also, I'd be very careful to avoid being smug about people who make faith-based decisions, because even if you think you are tremendously skeptical, even if you think you are an atheist and blah, 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 I guarantee you, you accept so many ridiculous things on faith. You get in that car, you hop on the interstate, you're just kind of taking it as an article of faith that you're not going to die. Maybe sometime, but not this time. We all exercise our agency in that liminal space between what is proven and what we wish to be true.
This is the last thing I'm going to say, Ben. I think this is correct. You'll have to check me here. That Manasse's last, before he died, his last prediction about when this whole thing would go down was in the year 2000, the turn of the millennium.
That's correct.
Okay. So I'm just going to put these things together really fast. In that year, same year that he predicted it would occur, there was a report from Project for a New American Century that came out that said, much like Watchmen, much like what's described in Project Bluebeam, we needed a new Pearl Harbor in order to unite the people in a common, at that point within that report, the common goal was to unite against an enemy of some sort. And of course, the Project for a New American Century is aimed directly at the United States, but you could imagine it being an enemy that all humanity could fight against, i.e. some kind of extraterrestrial force or, it's something that's similar to what's described by Manasse. Just putting that out there because they put that in 2000 and we know what happened in 2001.
False flags are real. That's an historical fact. Really, the only thing worth debating in that world or in that area of conversation is which things are in fact false flags. But anyone denying the existence of those sort of things right now is being willfully ignorant.
And that is not us saying that 9/11 was a false flag.
I'm just saying they exist.
They exist. And I will say it too. False flags are real. Okay.
False flags are real.
Well, I don't know what to end this on, Ben. We're talking about hologram technology, and I would just encourage everybody to go through, use DuckDuckGo or whatever search engine. I would, encourage you to use DuckDuckGo because they still acknowledge our YouTube channel. Look at some of the tech that's being developed right now. that some of it is available, some of it is just on the cusp of being available to consumers. And at the levels that it exists right now, you can totally imagine that a projected hologram into cloud cover or just the moisture in the lower atmosphere could be a real thing.
And I'd also like to hear, like to get a gauge of the optimism v. pessimism amongst our fellow listeners, because I am convinced that due to longtime listeners, you know this, I'm convinced that due to hardwired physiological constraints in the human brain, there's no way we're going to get billions of people to cooperate on anything. What would be something that would unite everybody? Because I'll tell you, this is going to make me sound like a jerk, Matt, but I'll tell you, if there were an actual alien invasion, everyone knew it was coming. Everyone knew that genocide was on the menu for every, forget Homo sapiens, for every primate on the planet. I guarantee you right now, it is my opinion that there would be millions of people who would be on board with the aliens. And they, you know, they would say, look, no, it's better. They got some great points. I think really we should roll out the red carpet. I don't know, man. I'm feeling very pessimistic nowadays. But we want to hear what you think, of course. And we want to say, like, you know, maybe we've been treating this. We don't mean to treat it dismissively. It's just that there are a lot of fail points for that plan, by which I mean things that could go wrong. And there are a lot of explanations that Manasse never really provided, and a lot of things that seem like leaps, right? Sorry. He loves Project Bluebeam. He's had enough. So let us know your thoughts as always. We hope this episode finds you safe. And doing as well as can be possible in these days. We can't wait to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. You can also take a page from Wayne's book, or his phone book in this case, if anybody remembers what those are, and you can call us directly.
We are 1-833-STDWYTK. Leave us a message. Talk to us about anything. You got 3 minutes to do it. Try and limit it to, like, you know, one or two, maximum 3 messages in a row, just because there are a lot. I haven't checked them in a while, and we're back up to like 70 that I have to check. So you and I need to split that up and get on it ASAP. But yes, please continue to call in. We want to hear from you.
I'll be on it too.
Awesome. And if you don't want to do that stuff, we recommend that you write to us via email, because that is still a thing. Use Proton or, you know, your old AOL address, whatever you got to do. Send us an email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.